Welcome back to another episode of Journey into the Vortex, where metaphysics meets real life. My name is Mary Roseman, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Marcella Nitschke and Heather Wells. We are three ordinary women who have seen our lives transformed into the extraordinary through the discovery of the metaphysical laws and principles. And that is exactly what we want to share with you each week as we try to unravel the mysteries of the universe and discover how expanding your consciousness through metaphysical awareness can bring clarity, purpose, and transformation to your life. So let's get started. Hi there, y'all, and welcome back to Journey into the Vortex. You know how our theme or our motto is three ordinary women living extraordinary lives? Well, we've got a very extraordinary visitor today, and we're just so thrilled that she's joined us and excited and giddy. And it sounds like her journey was very much like ours to begin with. I mean, she started like in 87 in the early 90s. So I just want to introduce to y'all Barbara Wythe. And she's an international peace activist, award-winning author, publisher, psychic channeler, composer and performer, workshop facilitator, and inspirational speaker. She is a co-founder of Conflict Revolution, a revolutionary way to resolve conflicts of the psyche based on her work channeling with Albert Einstein. And she has authored 6 books on metaphysics. Barbara also teaches and trains Conflict Revolution in the classroom and on Zoom, and lectures on her Einstein's Unified Field Theory, Map of Human Consciousness, and the Science of Compassion. Right? Look at the buffet choose from to chat. Now, it was just a given. At first, we're like, oh, we're going to talk to a psychic, da da da. And then we started studying her work. And it was just a no-brainer. We need to really talk about the conflict revolution. I believe this is her life's work, her calling, right? And in a way, it's all of ours. And you'll see what I'm talking about as we go on. And so the cool thing is, we all, the three of us separately went off on our own way, watched the videos, you know, everything that we could about Barbara Wythe, you know what I mean, to get prepared. And then we came back. And of course, all three of us had different interests about her work. So hopefully we'll cover something that really intrigues you, dear listener, because each of us were attracted to different things. So welcome, Barbara. And I get to start with the question. I'm a coach. So my I'm kind of focused on growth and helping other beloved. And so as you acquaint us with conflict revolution, and while you're doing that, because I don't really want to keep interrupting you with questions, but while you're in the flow and you're telling us why it's different from conflict resolution, here was my question the whole time I was watching the different things. How does the micro personal work, me working on my bullshit, my triggers, what I'm, you know. So now I'm in the middle of doing the conflict resolution. How does that serve in creating peace, say in the Middle East or the Ukraine? So we'll bring it, we're on the micro level and we're bringing it into the macro level.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for having me on. And it's a wonderful question about conflict revolution, because conflict revolution is based on this completely revolutionary way of first dealing with conflict on the inside. And what does that mean, right? People are like, well, what does it mean that I need to deal with my inner conflict? Well, Einstein, through hours and years and decades of work of not only channeling the information in the process, but then having, I have two associates that I started out working with in the triad as well, to use the information that we were channeling on our own conflicts. So that was the beginning of the formulation of it. And the actual very, very first time that we ever applied anything, we were having our very first conflict. We had come together. I knew these women about 6 months and doing this exciting work. And yet up came the conflict. And we were sitting at my living room table going back and forth about, but I need you to do this, but you need to do blah, blah, blah. And I said, hold on. We just channeled a session. It was called conflict resolution at the time. But what it said in it that made my head whip around, because I was a rageaholic victim, high anger, high drama. If you are engaged in a conflict, if you're emotionally engaged, the root of your part of it is within you. And that just made me crazy, because what does that mean? And over the years, they've explained about this inner life that we have. This, they call it the three human dimensions. So they're like spiritual organs. Like the heart has one function, the stomach has another function, and you treat them differently. If the heart is ailing, you do one thing. So they introduced us to these three human dimensions. And they gave us a full understanding of what each one was, what its purpose was, and how they all work together, and where the conflicts lie within this inner world. And the idea was, now bear in mind, this took years and years and years to all unfold itself, so I can tell you this. But what it showed us was that this system that they were showing us, he said, Einstein said, this is a perfect system. So whatever is being projected from the source into your body, into the lens of your world, is perfectly projecting whatever on that gravitational wave in the non-physical with these three human dimensions. So if there's a lot of conflict in here, naturally, it's going to manifest in conflict out here. And if you resolve conflict here, this was their thesis, that you don't go after the resolution of conflict in the arena. So in other words, world peace is going to be the byproduct. We go to resolve the conflict here. And when we do that, the system, which naturally projects a perfect representation of what's going on there, will suddenly change what's manifesting based on the peace that you've brought into yourself. So for example, I had a client in Norway, and her conflict was her mother-in-law hated her. 25 years, my mother-in-law wants to deport me because she was from Barbados and married this Norwegian guy. And after she went through the workshop, she came to me and she said, you knew where this was going. And I said, yes, but not because I'm some, you know, oh, I'm an all-seeing psychic, but because this is a formula that anybody can listen to, when you listen to anybody who has a conflict, to see what is the piece that's bugging them. She wants to deport me, she hates me. And she teared up and she said, I'm homesick. I want to go back to Barbados, but I can't because I have children and a husband. And I said, Judy, how old are your kids? Well, they're 14 and 17. Really? And your husband, who's a millionaire, who, so she had no idea that she was doing this. She was making these excuses for why she couldn't go and then blaming her mother-in-law. So when that changed for her in that moment, and she got it in her body because it was the truth that she discovered, I didn't tell her, her entire relationship changed with her mother-in-law. 25 years of pressure manifested differently. She couldn't have done that had she gone at the arena of the conflict. So the theory is that I think this is the only way we're going to change the world, because we can't go at whichever political side is in charge and they're both as bad as the other one. Right. We can't go at our neighbors. So the theory is, if enough people are willing to look inside, make this change, and then naturally we're going to see shifts in how the externals come about. So bear in mind, this is, as Einstein used to do in life, a thought experiment. This is an experiment. It's always been an experiment. But what I found in the microcosm is that when I change it, when I resolve it, something manifests miraculously that I never could have made happen. And so that's my hope for the macrocosm as well.
Right. So it kind of feels, Marcella and Heather, like you're just saying it in a different way, that whatever you're putting out there creates waves out into the quantum field. And so you're creating possibilities. So if you can create them on a micro level, you're creating them on a macro level as well.
Yes. Yes. But it's also based on the idea, and I only learned this from doing conflict revolution, okay, is that we have conflicts we don't even know exist. And we have thought processes. We have kind of, there's like three levels of intellectual. There's the superconscious where we all can think we're all one. There are no mistakes. Then there's the human range of hearing, you know, with our yada, yada, yada. And then there's this subatomic messages that we don't even know exist. And until we get to those, we can be in the human range and in the superconscious. We can be thinking all the great things. But if we don't understand those subatomic conflicts that exist within us, then we can't get to them.
Yeah.
If we get to those.
And I'm the type that likes to skip ahead. And she usurped me right back into, you got to do the work. Right.
So I have a question. So, okay, so we work on ourselves. How much impact do we have? How many of us need to be doing this, like, to help the collective?
Well, when we started working together, the three of us, and we were talking to angels, what they said is that there's these circles, there's these ripples. And when you go at a conflict in the arena, like conflict resolution, you can affect a change in that tiny circle as you negotiate and everybody does, you know, performs for each other so that you're not conflicted. But when you do it here, it affects all of those circles. It affects your conflicts with your job and your conflicts with your family and your conflicts everywhere else. It has a profound effect on all of them, so that I can't really tell you exactly how many people it needs or what is that critical mass that we need to do it. But I think it's much smaller than we imagine. I think it's far fewer people actually have to be digging down this deep. Because I think that the world right now is being shocked into compassion. And more people are realizing the dire state of the world, by especially now with the what's happening in the Middle East. And that compassion is powerful. It's so powerful in those open hearts and those people who are feeling deeply. They may not know what to do, and they may still feel hopeless. But it's activating something within them that is useful right now for people to feel that compassion and to feel their feelings. So I think it's a lot fewer than we think.
I'm just really curious about your channeling more and how you, I know you kind of talked about when you started, but how did you know? How did you, was it intentional? How did the channeling begin for you?
Well, when I was going in high school to a woman who was a channel, we didn't call her a channel, but she was just Mike's mom. And she did these incredible readings and really so much compassion and talked about, for me, my music. And so she always said that she was an antenna. She was just an antenna. She was picking up your higher power and feeding it back to your human mind who couldn't get to that those heights. So when I started automatic writing, I knew what it was. And even though they said they were sound, I thought, well, that's fine. I'm an antenna and I'm picking up sound like I do music and I'm feeding it back to you. But when I started doing groups and the girls asked, who are you? And they said, you can call us angels. And I didn't I wasn't good with that. I didn't feel like I'd been an antenna. You know, there were no dead people. There were no angels or entities. But what they were telling us was so divine, and it was so compassionate and so changing our lives for the better, that Kim said, I don't care if it's the Easter Bunny, because my life is changing in ways that I've never been able to make a change before. So after we put out our first book, and I, you know, I was okay with the angelic angel part of it, we got a literary agent to shop the rights to it. And she called me one day and said there was a tabloid in London, it was a metaphysical or a paranormal tabloid, that was looking for an interview with Princess Di from beyond the grave on the 1 year anniversary of her death. And again, red flags all up, like, really, this sounds so gratuitous. And while I had learned that I could communicate with people who had passed on through, you know, Teresa's mother and other like regular ordinary things, I never thought about going to a dead person and asking them if they would let me channel them. I'd never done such a thing, and I was reluctant, but I did it. And after I did it, I was so blown away by, I typed and then I read, I was so blown away by the information. Not only was it so detailed, like what her and Dodie talked about and the dynamic of their relationship and her sons, and but her message was about peace. It was about world peace. And if everybody out there who put flowers on my grave would make peace, we could end war. And so the tabloid didn't want it, I'm quite sure, because there was no dirt about Camilla and Charles in it. But my agent and I said, well, maybe there's other dead people who want to talk. So we made this big list, and all of them didn't want to talk. Gandhi didn't want to talk. Mother Teresa didn't want to talk. Elvis didn't want to talk. But next up was Nicole Brown Simpson. And she was almost more profound to me. I learned so much from the dynamics of what the OJ did and her relationship and what happens in the afterlife when you get murdered by your husband and leave your kids behind. So we went like this until we got to John Kennedy, which he, by the way, delivered the information that we now all are learning about how he died. And he said to us, okay, you don't have to go thinking up names. We're already here in afterlife working for peace, and we'll tell you who comes up next. Oh. So then they brought Jacqueline Onassis. And then when they brought Albert, I knew this voice. This was the voice that had been coming out of me for years. This even went back to sound. And I think it went back to being 5 years old and being inspired to play the piano, because he was a great musician, you know, amateur musician in his own right, Einstein was. So even then though, I was not comfortable saying, hey, I channel Einstein, because it's just, it's taxing on the psyche, because you want to believe it, but really. So what made it evidential for me was after I did the first book and he delivered this unified field theory, and it became so real to me, profound, that this would come out of me. And so I did this big event in 2007 with the Crimson Circle, and I was in front of probably 250,000 people online, and got invited all over the world. And people admonished me for not just standing up and saying it's Einstein, because they all knew it was Einstein. It's like, okay, all right. So how that, you know, it's been a long journey to bring it to that, that place of evidentiary. And even now I still say to people, I'm not here to convince you it's him, but I'd like you to see this information and tell me what you think it is. And that's people have a hard time denying that it's Einsteinian level.
I honestly, I don't know that I, you know, I don't know what I would have done. Seriously, y'all. You got the wrong person.
You got the wrong Trust me. I've said that many times. What are you trying to do to me?
Right.
Speaking of channeling, you know, that's something that I don't know. I always wished I had that skill, because I thought, well, if I could just get answers to this or connect with, is that something that we all can do? Do you think it's something that is like a gift, or it's that something we don't want?
I think it's a function of being human. I think we are channeling our lives in the way, in the unified field. It shows us how we're channeling the energy of all of this mathematics that's here to form my DNA, space-time body, and the room. So we're doing that. And then on a more practical level, scientists channel. I heard Brian Greene, this astrophysicist, talking about how he does formulas, and I thought, that's just channeling. He gets out of the way, he goes and he listens. Musicians channel all the time. But I think the operative thing in your question is that as a part of the human operating system, everybody has intuition as a piece of it. And intuition is designed to tell you, well, it basically is there to impel you to take the next step for the good of the whole system of what's going on. But it also has that power to pick up information beyond what the human mind can grasp and understand and perceive. And if we had the map in front of us, I could show you, you know, why it is that intuition has this ability to tap into much greater information and bring it down into the source, that then it becomes a part of our system and our makeup and the information that we know. So I think everyone can channel. And I used to teach people how to channel. And the biggest obstacle is the self-doubt. The self-doubt, the voices in your head that say, what are you doing? You can't, you're just making that whole thing up.
Like when in meditation, right? When we sit and we want an answer, and then we know we are vibrating, we're connecting with our higher self. We know, right? I guess that we can call that channeling, right?
Yep. Yep. And it's bigger than I think channeling is where we become conscious of the whole operating system, because we live in our head so much. We live in intellect, like this is the primary reality in our minds, when really there's this three-pronged operating system that is interdependent upon each other, and intuition is one of them. So I think everyone can.
Mm-hmm. Not with Einstein, but
maybe.
Barbara, you said that knowing the science, understanding the science helps. When Mary mentioned that we were all interested in different ways in your work, I'm very interested about the unified field theory. And in fact, I think in one of your videos or somewhere I read that you mentioned Nassim Haramein. And I love his work. I've been always interested in his work, and even signed up for the Resonance Academy and that kind of thing. So my question is, what message do you get from like Einstein? When is it to understand the science so more people open up to this work? Because the science is not the thing, right? It's just the proof of us all being one, and the, what is the message that they would give to someone, like how to help that work of the unified field theory or the science of it, how to present it?
Well, I think what's interesting is that we got the human process first. We got not the science. We got the six steps to peace, of how to have peace, how to make peace, and conflict revolution. And we watched as it worked in that way. So we would resolve a conflict inside, and suddenly some miraculous thing would happen every single time when we had our aha moment. And then came the unified field theory for him to not only, it took a long time for them to unfold to me. It just didn't start out in 1987, hi, I'm Albert Einstein. It took a long time to psychologically prepare me for the fact that I was going to be delivering Einstein's unified field theory from afterlife. So when he finally got there and delivered it, what he said was, this is to inform the scientists, first of all, because it's going to revolutionize science, it's going to revolutionize psychology, and how people deal with psychology and psychiatry. And there's probably a lot of other things that are going to be affected by that. So his sense was, in the science field, we want you to show it to the scientists so that they can start to be inspired and generated for themselves. And in the Sims case, his presentation thus far is the beginning. He's got little pieces of the whole thing. And so I can't wait to show it to him. But the other side of it is that I think it sums it up. I had a friend who bought my Imagining Einstein essays on M theory, world peace, and the science of compassion. That was my first Einstein book. And she called me up and she said, "Oh my gosh, my husband and I, we love each other, but the one thing that we've never seen eye to eye on is spirituality. And this book brought us together because it has science in it and it has spirit in it." And so I think for the practical sort of ordinary women with extraordinary lives, it's really a very clear step-by-step instructions for how to do this process so clearly. It's not that it's easy, because we have to deal with our ego, which doesn't want to give up control of the whole system, but it's simple. It's simple to understand. And it's inspiring once you do it and you have that aha moment, and then you have that manifestation of the miracle, then you want more. Then you want more. And so that's what leads to then the thriving and the change of your whole life and what manifests in that.
So Barbara, I got a question. Am I going to have to be continuing to do my work as long as I'm in this human body? Is there that point where I'm on the other side?
It's a question for you, Mary, because you're an onion, like a peeling.
I know. Right.
Well, I think my experiences in my life, and I've come from such a tortured and wounded background, and it's been a long road. But what I found, particularly in these past several years, these recent several years, is that I've gotten to a place where all of those outside forces that used to trigger me all the time, because I've done all this inner work and I've taken those triggers in, and I've taken some psychopathic triggers, I've taken war triggers, that I'm not to a place where I'm immune, but I have a system in place that now, unlike 1993, when the three of us were starting to do this and it took us years to figure it out, now when I get triggered and I find myself going, well, you know, she's kind of a control freak. And then I can go, okay, there's that disgust, you hear, there's that emotion, you know, okay, control freak. Okay, let's revolve back. That's your work today, Barb. Where are you being a control freak? And what level? It might not even be anything like the mirror. Mm-hmm. But when I turn that around and go, okay, my job now is to make sure that my ego is not going to be the control freak that doesn't let me feel, that doesn't listen to my intuition, that projects, that's my job. And that's a 24/7 job, for me anyway. So we have to keep doing it, but the idea that Einstein says, it's a new operating system. It's a new way of processing conflict that's gonna be there. Conflict is not in and of itself a bad thing. Artists, you know, conflicts spur great work. But it's the human attachment to the old system where we have a feeling, we see something outside ourselves that we think caused that feeling, and so we project onto it. We have to get rid of that thing outside ourselves in order to deal with this feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's like, you know, standing in front of a mirror and painting on your outfit and then wanting to, you know, go out. You can't really, you can't. You have to just stand there and to make sure you don't ruin the reflection. So So that's the new operating systems that we just do it automatically. We stop projecting onto people. We this us versus them mentality that's fueling all these wars. We do away with that in within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And you know, you all know, you know, this is the super conscious thinking. We are all one. Yeah, until your neighbor pisses you off, yeah. Right? Then we're not all one. So how do we do that? How do we live in a world where we can say we're all one when half the time, a lot of the people we don't even want to be around or have judgments about? Practical.
So I have a question about, so on our podcast, the goal is to encourage people to learn about metaphysics just so they change their worldview, the way they view everything, because really everything changes, right? When we know it's not out there, it's here, and we understand the principles and everything. So through our talks and different topics, we try to bring that, to spark that interest in learning beyond the mainstream, look at things differently, explore a certain work or a certain author. So for people who want to learn about what you do, like Conflict Revolution, learn how to, it's a workbook, how did they get it, how long does it take, what can they do as a tool, like if we want to, you know, present that?
Well, I do have a Conflict Revolution workbook that's the very basic entry level into conflict revolution and how it works. And where that came from was when I first started training it in 1999, I didn't have any of the science. I just had these sessions I had channeled with, well, it was the angels at the time, and taking it and making it into a process that I could teach people how to do. And this workbook that I published last year was based on those original curriculums. And I did that because I think there's so much simple knowledge in the process that kind of gets overwhelmed when you actually go into the science and into the unified field theory and the maps of human consciousness. And my last book, Einstein et al., Manifestation, Conflict, Revolution, and the New Operating System, is really a very thick book. It takes people a long time to get through it. So I really recommend the workbook because you can get a basic idea for what the revolutionary pieces are in this process. And it's not that you've never heard these things before. It's just that how they're all put together creates this like aha moment. And there's a few things in it. And, you know, I'm not sure how long it would take anybody today, depending upon how motivated you are to actually do your own work and find those places inside yourself that are conflicted. It's not a natural, it's like kind of counterintuitive to go looking for these things inside. But if you do it, the two main revolutionary points are, there's this whole thing about joy and this, you need to stay in this high frequency of emotion and you have to stay away from anger and depression and all that because those are lower frequency. Well, we throw all that out the window to say that the whole spectrum of emotion really has a different function than we've ever been told. And it's the underpinning of all the creation of the universe. And so we want to feel the entire spectrum. We want to feel it all with our breath, moving it through our body, and keeping it away from our thinking, from our intellect, the organ of the intellect. Because what happens in the old system, this anger comes up, it marries to a thought, well, my boyfriend is so disrespectful, starts projecting, and there's that created reality. You're creating that reality. So when you break them apart, you don't want to not feel the anger. You don't want it to marry to any particular thoughts that's going to project or blame or judge somebody else or you. So there's this disconnection of emotion from intellect and using the breath. Now that's, we all know that. Feel and breathe. We know to feel and breathe, but when you put it in the whole system to see that, oh, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be able to feel my anger, What I'm not supposed to do is let it marry to the thought that it's about somebody else out there. And in fact, anger can fuel incredible, peaceful intentions. Any emotion can fuel that manifestation. So this is a really different way of approaching it, and it requires a kind of vigilance every day to cultivate this witness of ourselves. So every day we can rise up and go, okay, today I'm going to witness. What am I thinking? What am I sensing? What am I feeling? And you can be standing in line at the supermarket or driving in traffic and adopt and adapt that perspective. And it's amazing how quickly things change when you can. The first time that you can like feel this anger, maybe it's about your sister or your brother-in-law, and stop and go, wait a minute, let's just move this. Let's just move this feeling right now. Let's just breathe through it. Everything changes. The projection isn't fueled, so that thought gets less powerful and then you separate the thought from the intellect, and intuition is able to rise and be heard. So then we can follow that. And I think people are doing this now. Now, I've been doing this for 30 some years, but now, especially the young people, this is coming much more naturally, and people are far less resistant to want to know what's going on inside them.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned using the breath is in a particular way, or protocol, or how to use it, or a system, or pranayama principles, that kind of thing.
No, I think it's just an awareness of the need. So here's my example is that I was flying from Alamosa, Colorado into Denver in a little tiny plane. And so you get off at a different place. And there was my bag sitting right there. And I was talking to the clerk saying, but that's my bag and I have to catch a connection. Can I just have it? No, there's all allowed. No, can't get, just give it to you. No. And I was getting so frothed up. And that was my old MO, was this rage, you know, like, and so the most important part is not how you do it, but to be able in a moment like that, I finally stopped and I went, just a second, because I was making a scene. And I backed myself up kind of around the corner and I just stood there going, and I came out and I was like, it was Jekyll and Hyde. I'm sure they thought I was insane, but I could get control, change the course of that moment. And that's the important thing, is these are baby steps that we're doing. This isn't, we're not going to solve the world's problems. We're going to take these baby steps, because it is going to have an impact on all the circles in our life. And then the people, like the clerk who saw me transform just by breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my associate today, she told me the story of, she was this triumph. She's triggered by her mother all the time. And there's this situation that her mother hasn't always been completely stubborn on. And they got into it yesterday. And she made that same thing. She said, you know what? I just thought, wait a minute, just stop, just breathe. And so I was breathing and feeling all that angst and that anxiety and just breathing. And then came the words to explain to her in a way that she finally heard. So when we don't make that stop to breathe out our emotion, we keep going and now we have to be right. And now nobody's gonna hear. But when we stop, it's like, okay, here's why, Mom. And it changed. Her mother said, oh, well, that makes sense. And the situation changed. So it's a remarkable world we live in, and we have so much power we don't know about.
Yeah. That's so true. We have so much power we don't know. Our whole electromagnetic field, right? It's just, it influences. And like you said, it's the ripple.
So. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Cool stuff. Right. Okay, here's the question I want to know. Not somewhat about your personal life, but not digging in. Are you, do you like Heather's really in the mainstream a lot? My husband and daughter will tell you that it's kind of sometimes uncomfortable to be with me because I don't know how to not have the freak flag flying. So speak to that. Are you surrounded by like-minded all the time, or are you in the out in the mainstream? Because I can tell you right now, I may notice mainstream, but I don't know how to flow with it anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And when we started doing groups, and we had a sizable, you know, 20 people would come to our groups, and all the mostly women, and they all said the same thing is, we can't wait to get here so that we can talk openly and freely, because when we go back to our husbands, you know, they call us witches, you know, but like trying to be funny. And us too, I was married to a very mainstream guy who was tolerant, but he wasn't going to go there with me. Mm-hmm. And what the angels back then said was that once you get to a place where you have integrated yourself, where you are self-validating yourself, where you know yourself so well, and you're, this is about your operating system anyway, it's not anybody else's operating system, you're going to be guided to know what to say when, and you're going to easily follow that intuitive message, particularly when you're in the mainstream of with people who don't, you can't talk this openly with. But it doesn't matter, because it's not about talking openly, it's about what your actions and your decisions are. And what happened for me was that when I revved my conflict so much that I liberated myself from projection and blame, and people suddenly, I had a different relationship to them. Mm-hmm. And now what's so important to me is kindness for people, no matter who they are. And so I don't have that same sort of, well, you know, we're spiritual and they're kind of muggles, or whatever that word was from Harry Potter. Now it's just, we are all human beings. And we're all struggling through this transition right now. And we all need compassion. And the people who are jerks, I learned something very valuable. I went to, my mom's caregiver was Jamaican, and she brought me to Jamaica. She was a Jehovah's Witness. So everybody that the place that we stayed and our driver, they were all Jehovah's Witnesses, and they were the most wonderful, compassionate, caring people I had ever met. And Sister Reynolds was reading from Revelations, and this is 2016, so it wasn't even as bad as it is. And I said, Sister Reynolds, that sounds like now, all that evil, you know, all scourging across the land. Oh my God, what are we supposed to do? And she said, be a good person. And as simple as that statement was, it impacted me so much. Like, oh, I get it, because I am only responsible for my domain, and haters gonna hate, evil's gonna be evil. It doesn't have anything to do with me unless I get triggered by it, and then I get attached to it, and then I get sucked in to try to combat it out here. Be a good person. And that's never, it's just never left me. It's really stayed with me.
So it may be good practice, right, to be in the mainstream, because then you can test what triggers. If it still triggers you, then you still need to do some more work.
Exactly. And you know, you think you'll never stop being triggered, and it's probably true. You know, it's a process that goes on. But I guess, as I said before, where I am now, I get triggered, but I immediately have the revolution back to where, okay, there's your deal, Barb. There's what you're supposed to be working on. There's what you're supposed to be thinking about. And immediately my relationship changes with the person who triggered me. It's like there's this detachment about, oh, well, yeah, well, thank you. And then you can actually have a different relationship with them, to where you can have an impact. It's not the goal is to impact people, but it's much, much easier to do that. And we live, it's the embodiment of what we believe that's important, not what we believe, but how do we embody it? And like I said, to me, that's 24/7 work for me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Okay, Barbara, is there something that we haven't asked that you'd like to address?
Well, I think we've covered a whole bunch.
We have, but
I think that these conversations are just the beginning opening up of people thinking outside the box, people feeling so hopeless. And I say people sometimes feel incompetent, like they don't have what it takes to be able to do whatever they need to do, and which is why then they go to psychics and ask, hey, what's my future going to be?
Right.
So right now is this incredibly exciting time for somebody who's been doing this for this long and have been through so much resistance and so much having to do this sort of in a corner sometimes, and because it's not a mainstream thing. People aren't flocking to conflict revolution because nobody wants to deal with conflict. But now, in this day and age, in 2023, never before have I seen so many people getting it, so many people wanting to pick up their power, wanting to know what that means, even if it means I got to go in and get to that discomfort. And that's so, I'm so optimistic. And despite what's, we're on the brink of World War III, I'm still believe that we will reach a critical mass and that we will change the system without completely blowing everything up. And if I'm wrong, oh well, I guess, you know, if we're all going to be not here, I can't cop to the fact that I was wrong. But I just think it's our job, it's our duty, it's our responsibility to give all that we can right now, because we have been born here at this time, no accident, to be having these conversations, to becoming the change. And more than ever, it's accessible and available, and more people than ever are asking and wanting it. So
right. So the other part of my question was, where do people find about your work? At your website or
yeah, I have Barbara With, BarbaraWith.com. That's really, if you want to book a reading or look at my reading stuff. And then I have SynergyAlliance.llc. And that is the new website that I just built for all of us. When we published Diaries of a Psychic Sorority in 1998, we opened the Synergy Alliance as our publishing company. And then I went off and made my own, and Kim went off and made her own. And in the past year, we've put everything back together under one roof of all the work that we've done together since Diaries. And Synergy Alliance has all my events. I've got some in-person events coming up. I'm on this world tour. I'm on my way to Oslo in December for a couple of months, where I'm also going to the UK. And you can also go to partyof12.com, partyof12.com. That's a website I started years and years ago, and there's just an amazing amount of channeled, free channeled information from years past when I used to do different groups about different topics, you know, relationships and such. So those are really three good places to find everything conflict revolution.
I noticed in November you're going to Austin.
Yes.
What are y'all doing?
I'm going to do a Friday night channel, and then Saturday we're going to do Unified Field Theories and Conflict Revolution.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, I was on a podcast with Tiana and Tim, and I got a call after that one from the granddaughter of Bruno, I forget his last name. He was an astrophysicist, Italian astrophysicist, who actually worked with Einstein.
Really?
And worked on the Manhattan Project. And she said every time she ever asked her grandfather about the Manhattan Project, he'd go in the other room and weep. So we had a reading and we contacted him, and it was very, so they invited me to come, and I thought, yep, I'm coming. So
to sign up for those events or to find out, it's on your website too?
Yes. SynergyAlliance.llc.
Or podcasts. I think you have a list of podcasts that you've been on your website too, right?
Yes. Yes. I've been doing a lot of podcasts. It just is a fantastic time right now for these kind of conversations. So many going on.
Yeah. So I'm feeling complete. How about you, beloved? Are y'all good, Heather and Mark?
I am. I kind of indicated I thought I might be quiet today and just be a listener. So I've been absorbing so much information and been wonderful.
It has been.
Me too, but I would love to have you again, Barbara.
I would love to come and talk again, and maybe while I'm in Europe, getting into all kinds of shenanigans over there.
Yeah,
and just, you know, because we're on all sorts of different levels out there, their listeners. Do you have a minimum amount of people that you have to attend your group?
I don't.
Ooh, okay, so that's even juicier, right?
Thinking about
yeah. I would love to come. This
you're like 6.5. How many hours away from us? You're not that far.
Yeah, you're in Wisconsin, right?
I live in Wisconsin. Are you in Kansas City?
I thought you were in Minneapolis. We're in Kansas
City. I'm in Minneapolis right now.
Okay.
Yes, we're in Kansas City.
But when I get back from Europe in mid-February, I'll be going back to Georgia, where I'm kind of camping out for a little while. And I've rented my home in northern Wisconsin for the winter. Uh-huh. And I'm on the road. And I actually have some very good friends in Kansas City who have asked me to stop by on the way back. So I would love to come and whatever we do. It's my mission is not, I will take as much money as the universe wants to give me. But my mission is to get these conversations going. And it's not about, you know, making money. I have other ways that I make money right now. So I want people to feel like they can have a group or ask me to come, because the small groups are so great. It's just so great.
So I know, dear listener, this was kind of unusual how we started chatting about logistics. But here's the deal. This is really important work, and it needs to get out there. And so you heard us in a dialogue how easy this was for her to come where you're at. All you have to do is reach out and ask. I mean, don't put beloveds who are doing this work on this high pedestal and, oh, this can never happen. Call, get on that webpage and contact and figure out how you can bring her into your town, your city, your environment, right? And so we just want to close in so much gratitude. Gratitude for those that checked in and listened to our podcast. So much gratitude for Barbara and everything that you're doing. Thank you so much. And so we are so happy today that you journeyed into the vortex of conflict revolution. So till next time, right, ladies, when we journey into
the vortex.
Thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed today's dialogue. Please do not hesitate to let us know if you have questions, suggestions, or simply want to connect. You can reach us through our website at journeyintothevortex.com, Facebook, or Instagram. We hope you will join us again as we continue this transformative journey into the vortex.